Morning, members.
This morning, we have Representative Hackbart's House File 984 before us, commonly called the Game and Fish Bill. Any comments before Representative Hackbart starts? I think we're trying to get back on track here after a couple long days in session, and we may have a time getting everybody here. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just looking. There seems to be some additional amendments that have come. I don't know if they were posted or not. Are there more coming, or
Representative Hansen? I'm actually not sure exactly who those amendments are from. Do you mind expanding your thoughts on what we should do as we go forward here? Some of this is a little different, and I want to make sure that both sides of the aisle and the audience are comfortable. Do you have a suggestion, Representative Hansen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, we've had a couple long days at the Capitol in the last few days, and having the opportunity to look through things, we appreciate posting a couple of the amendments. I think that maybe Representative Wagenius has an idea here on how we go forward today to make sure we have everybody fully informed when they vote. So,
okay. Representative Wagenius.
I certainly hope we get to go through the whole bill today. Are you planning on voting on this bill today?
Representative Wagenius, that was our intention to vote today. Do you have a different intention? Go ahead, please speak. I've got an open mind as we get back in gear. Go ahead.
Well, it seems to me that we are going to be talking about fees and a fee increase. Is that correct?
You know, Representative Wagenius, I don't think we are going to unless you're interested in having that discussion. I don't think I understand that there may be an amendment in our packet that discusses fees, but my understanding, no one from our side of the aisle intends to offer that amendment.
Oh, all right. So that does make it a different kind of bill if it doesn't have fees in it. But I do see fees in here, like the Sandhill Crane, and I see appropriations in here that make me very uncomfortable because we're not supposed to do appropriations. Should have come in appropriations bill, whether they be ag or environment. And I think there's some other issues that need to be discussed here, and I don't know how. If there are no fees, that takes one thing off the table, but there's some other things in here that are fees. And the authorization for compensation seems to me to have been an issue that should have been in our earlier bills, whether they be ag or environment.
Well, those are good points, Representative Wagenius. Why don't we begin to move through? Okay. We'll have any more discussion anybody wants to have, but we won't make final judgment. If we're not ready to vote on the bill at the end of the day for some of the concerns you've mentioned or Representative Hansen's mentioned, then we won't move forward. If everyone feels we've discussed issues, the audience has had a chance to participate, we've heard from the DNR, any other agencies that need to have questions or comments, we'll hear from them. But we'll begin to move forward here. Members, we do need to be done by 10 o'clock as usual. Originally, I thought we were going to have to be done by about 10:02, but my understanding is caucuses in a session have been pushed back a little bit, so our intention is to be done. Unless someone from the minority, are you scheduled to caucus at 10 still? If you are, we're going to quit at 10 too. Or are you scheduled, do you know, is your caucus scheduled for 10 a.m. still?
10:30.
Thank you, Representative Purcell. So we're going to assume that we can go till 10 o'clock, but if either the minority or majority here is different, that we need to be done, we'll quit by 10 to 10. And then when Representative Hansen gets a chance, Representative Hansen.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just the route of this might make a the route after here too might make a.
Representative Hansen, I think it would be. I can't speak for Representative Hackbart, but I'm assuming the intention is to go to the general register. I'm sorry, I guess not. Representative Hackbart, do you want to Why don't we let Representative Hackbarth get going on his bill rather than us talk about all the different scenarios that are going to happen?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we need to start moving on the bill, and I don't know if we've got a quorum and we're ready to roll. Or
Maybe I didn't. Representative Hackbarth, thank you. We'd like to bring the Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee to order. Representative Hackbarth,
thank
before
you,
us,
Chairman.
House File 984.
Thank you. I would move House File 984. You recommended to pass, and Mr. Chairman, the bill probably has to go to government operations. It might have to go to taxes. It's got a couple of issues in it. I don't mind going to those places. We'll address those issues at that time in those committees. There isn't, as Representative Wagenius was mentioning earlier before we brought the meeting to order, the bill does have to, a new license for sandhill cranes in the bill. And it does create a new fee for that, so it does have to go to taxes. And that's okay. But I would move the bill, recommended to pass, House File 984, and wherever you think it needs to go first, probably government operations first, Mr. Chairman. That's probably where we should send it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I have a delete all amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like. And I would next move the 0225. Is that the delete all amendment, Mr. Chairman? The 0225 amendment to get the bill in the shape I'd like.
Representative Hackbarth moves House File 984 to pass and go to government operations. Representative Hackbarth, two-year delete all amendment.
Well, if we could get the bill in the shape I'd like, and then we can discuss the amendment from there, and then that would be the bill.
Okay. Representative Hackbarth would like to move the A2225 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Discussion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay. We've got that delete all in front of us. Representative Hackbarth, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I do have a couple of amendments that were posted. There's a few amendments that were not posted. I'm okay with not doing those amendments if that's okay with members. I do have some technical changes that I think would be okay with members to take care of. But mostly, members, this bill is the DNR's game and fish bill that they bring forward, and mostly non-controversial. It's usually the members that put some controversial issues into the game and fish bill. And we have the DNR here to talk about their issues. A lot of this bill, and the majority of this bill, is what was in the Game and Fish bill last year that was vetoed by Governor Pawlenty, and there were some controversial issues in that bill that he had to veto both the lands bill that was combined with the Game and Fish bill, and now we need to redo some of those things. We redid the lands bill earlier this session, and we've got have that taken care of. Now we're going to redo some of those issues that were in the Game and Fish bill last year in this bill, and the DNR has added some new items to the bill also. Members, I can go through the bill section by section if you like. Pretty non-controversial. I can touch on the more controversial ones if you like, or the ones that were added by me. There's some other members that have bills in here. Representative Dill, Representative Drazkowski had an issue that he has to address that I put right into the bill. A lot of these things have been discussed already in this committee, the two-line fishing, the 60 lakes issue for spearing, Representative Purcell's bill on Cass Lake and lifting the spearing ban there. We've talked about those things already in this committee as informational hearings and laid over for possible inclusion in this bill, and they are in here now. Mr. Chairman, I think we're going to have a number of people that would want to testify today. With that, I would stand for questions, or if you'd like me to go through the bill section by section, I can do that.
Well, Representative Hackbarth, a lot of this bill is from last year. I know there's some new members, but just to get the process going, I guess I'd rather have members ask questions of you. We do need to hear from the DNR and all the different folks that are in the audience that want to testify.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Hackbarth.
I do have one technical amendment. There was an issue in Section 49 where there was some draft.
Representative Hackbarth, what page are you on?
This is an amendment that was just passed out, was just brought to me this morning by the DNR, and it's just to get the bill in the proper shape that it needs to be in. This was not posted online, but it was a drafting error, and we need to change this. Ms. Taylor had it drafted for me. It's the 0984A1 amendment. It's just a technical change, and I'd just like to insert that right away to get the bill in the shape we need.
Representative Hackbart, Ms. Taylor, can you explain the, it's the A1 amendment, members, it should be in your Hackbart. I believe it's signed by Representative Hackbart.
Well,
oh, I'm sorry.
It passed out just a few moments ago.
Just passed out a few moments ago. I guess Ms. Rudolph wrote your name on it. But Ms. Taylor, can you explain the amendment if it's technical? Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members, what it does is it replaces Section 14 in the Delete Everything Amendment regarding the definition of undressed bird. And it's just all the changes are in the Clause 1. Just instead of some other language, it just simplifies it so it's a bird excluding ducks with a fully feathered wing intact.
It's just to get the bill in the shape we need to have it in. It was a drafting error, and the DNR can explain the section when they come up.
Thank you. Discussion to the A1. All in favor of the A1, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Representative Hackbart, we now have the bill in the shape you'd like to discuss. Thank Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a little uncomfortable about folks not going through it, but and I think maybe other members are too. I mean, because I would go through and highlight some of the things that I find problematic.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. Representative Hackbart, do a quick walkthrough of the bill. Good point. Thank you.
I will.
Representative Wagenius.
If he does that, do you want us to ask questions as he goes or not?
Knowing Representative Hackbart, I got a feeling he wants to get through the bill and then we'll stand for questions. So I'd recommend members write their questions down as we go through. And Representative Hackbart, please do a walkthrough. Can you, Representative Hackbart, if you hit the controversial ones, if you'd mention that, and just quickly the ones that were already in the bill from last year that were non-controversial. I know a lot of that stuff, unfortunately, the Fish Lake issue, which is not in this bill naturally, former Senator Chaudhry's issue. Representative Hackbart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sections 1, 2, and 17 are new language that the DNR brought forward, and it has to do with damage caused by elk and farmers, etc., being reimbursed for that. That's Section 1, 2, and 17. Section 3 through 8 has to do with fish collection, and that was in the 2010 bill. Section 9 has to do with sucker eggs, and we can talk about that if you like. That was in the 2010 bill. Section 10 and 11 was also in the 2010 bill, and it has to do with fish and wildlife planning. The old sections in the original House File 984, Section 12 and 14, have been deleted from the Delete All Amendment. It had to do with feral swine and hogs being released into the wild. I do have an amendment that was posted earlier, I believe, that is going to address that, and we can talk about that if you like. I will be offering that amendment. I had some problems with the original language, and the DNR was kind enough to address my concerns, and we have an amendment to put back in the bill. Section 12 was also in the 2010 bill and has to do with bait harvest in infested waters. Sections 13, 28, 29, and 46. Sections 13, 28, 29, and 46 have to do with the new sandhill crane hunting license and allowing sandhill cranes to be hunted. That was not in the 2010 bill. Section 14 has to do with undressed birds. That is something that the DNR may want to have a few comments about. That is new language, was not in the 2010 bill. Section 15 was in the 2010 bill, has to do with unprotected birds, and it's has to do with the collared dove not being a protected bird. Section 16 is new language. It's has to do with the definition of a wild animal. Section 18 was, we already covered Section 17. Section 18 was in the 2010 bill and has to do with minnow harvest. In the old House File 984, or the original, there was a Section 21. We deleted that Section 21 language. I think the DNR was in agreement with taking that out. Section 19 was in the 2010 bill and has to do with hunting and fishing license refunds. Section 20 is new language and has to do with people's dogs killing and wounding deer. The new Section 21 in the Delete All Amendment was in the 2010 bill, and it has to do with charging people with well, if they're out hunting with and they've had their license privileges revoked, there's a stiffer penalty for people that are getting caught after they had their license revoked. Section 22 is new language, and it has to do with the cost of stamps. Section 23 is new language, and it has to do with transferring licenses. Section 24 is new language. It has to do with forms that taxidermists report to the DNR with, just some technical changes. Section 25 was in the 2010 bill. It has to do with elk license selection. Section 26 was in the 2010 bill. It has to do with the issuance of wild turkey licenses. Section 27 was in the 2010 bill, and it has to do with ice fishing in state parks for free. We allow that in the summertime now. This allows ice fishing to also take place for free within state park boundaries. Section 28 and 29 have to do with the Sandhill Crane again. Section 30 is the non-resident youth fishing fee clarification. That's new language. Section 31 is new language. It's Representative Dill's bill, House File 31, deer killed by motor vehicles. Section 32 is new language. It's possession of unlawful fish brought into the state, I think primarily from Canada. Section 33 was in the 2010 bill. It's the game bird transportation issue. I think it has to do with transporting mourning doves. Section 34 was in the 2010 bill, and it's about a parent or guardian being responsible. We can talk about that more if you like. The 2010 bill also had Section 35, and that's about apprentice hunters. The Section 36, 38, and 39. 36, 38, and 39, which was also in the 2010 bill, has to do with how special permits are issued to disabled hunters and who can issue those permits. Section 37 is ammunition restricted. I think it primarily has to do with while you're muzzle loader hunting for deer, you're restricted on what ammunition you can have with you. That's new language. Section 40 is new language. This is Representative Holberg's House File 124. It has to do with what firearms you can have with you while you're archery hunting. Let's see. Section 41 was in the original House File. 984 had a Section 41 that we deleted. The new Section 41 is new language. It's Representative Dill's House File 619. This is also an issue that Representative Cornish has carried in the past. It has to do with the height of hunting stands for deer, elk, moose, bear, etc. I think the DNR had some language to address that concern also, but this we did not accept the DNR's language, and we prefer this language. Section 42 is new language. And that from the DNR, it has to do with bear hunting drawings, and it eliminates the second chance drawing. Section 43 is new language. It's Representative Dill's House File 620. It has to do with bear baiting using a drum. Section 44 was in the 2010 bill. It has to do with taking of elk, damaged nuisance elk. Section 45 is new language. This is Representative Falk's language that has to do with beaver control by local road authorities. Section 46 is again Sandhill Crane language. Let's see. Section 47 was in the 2010 bill. Has to do with waterfall seasons modified. Section 48 is new language. That's my House File 348. We had discussion on that earlier in the session. Has to do with duck decoys. Section 49 was in the 2010 bill. It has to do with the DNR changing limits quickly during a season. It has to do with the ceded territory, 1837 ceded territory. 50 is new language. It has to do with the 60 lake spearing issue, experimental lakes. Section 51 and 52 has to do with clarifying how you issue fishing contest permits. That's new language that the DNR wanted. Section 53 was in the 2010 bill. It has to do with sturgeon tags, making some clarifications there. Section 54 was in the 2010 bill, transporting and stocking of fish. Section 55 is new language. That's the two-line fishing, my house file 16, that we did have discussion on already. Section 56 was in the 2010 bill. It's aquatic life prohibition from prohibiting using of certain aquatic life for bait. That was in the 2010 bill. Section 57 is new language. This was language that was brought to me by the Minnesota Board of Water and Soil Resources. Has to do with how they're going to implement the pilot walk-in program. Some language that they needed to do that. Section 58 is new language. This is Representative Dill's House File 621. Has to do with coyote and beaver control. Section 59 was in the 2010 bill. This has to do with the liability issue for the walk-in program. I don't know if Mr. Joel Carlson might be in the audience. He might have something to say about that. Section 60 is new language. It has to do with game farm forms that they have to fill out. I think it's a technical change that the DNR brought forward. Section 61 is new language. That is Representative Purcell's House File 242 on removing the ban on Cass Lake, the spearing ban on Cass Lake. We've had discussion on that issue already earlier in the session. Section 62 is new language. This is Representative Draskowski's issue about antler deer and how the regulations that we have down in his area for deer hunting. Members, I think that's pretty much the entire bill. And stand for questions or take testimony or...
Representative Hackbart, do you know the repealers? I think one of them is not one of them. My bill to repeal, and I'm okay, but I want to hear from the DNR. But I thought if you could run through the repealers quickly. Is there more than the one I know about the opening day of duck season?
There are repealers in the bill, Mr. Chairman, and I think we need to talk to the DNR about those repealers. They know more about those than I do. I know that there is a concern about one of the repealers that was not in the original House file, 984, and we may need to take that repealer out of the bill. I think it was mistakenly put in there, but we can hear from the DNR about that. But yes, your issue is in one of the repealers.
Representative Hackbart, how about if we take questions from members now, sure, and then maybe have DNR before, sure, we take citizen input. Representative Wiggins.
Well, thank you. Mr. Chair, four things came up for me when just in this quick run through, and the first one would be this authorization for paying more for damages for elk destruction. I don't find that a bad provision, but I do find that this is an appropriation and is inappropriate in this bill. We cannot just appropriate money in this bill without a fiscal note, and it should have gone in either the ag bill or our bill. I just don't think that's an appropriate way to do business. Let me go to Section 21 next, and I'll just list these questions, and then we can deal with them. We're having a gross misdemeanor here, and is there a major civil fine for the same person or not? Or are we just relying on the criminal system?
Representative Hackbart.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this is DNR language. I think it's probably time to bring the DNR down and have them walk through some of these issues. Most of this bill is a DNR bill that they've brought to me, and just like every other year that we have a game and fish bill, mostly it's DNR items that they need changes on. The DNR or the DNR is asking us to make these changes as the citizens legislature. I agree with most of these changes. Some of the things I had taken out that I didn't agree with. I think members have a right now to either vote some of these things up or down if they agree or don't agree with them. So I think it's time to bring the DNR down to explain some of these things. And Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius made some comments about appropriations and new fees and new licenses, etc. The Game and Fish Bill is not—it's not out of the question or out of the ordinary to put new issues into a Game and Fish Bill where there's new fees, new licenses, etc. This is the proper place for those things. We can introduce bills; they don't have to be in a finance bill, an actual large omnibus finance bill to move forward. These bills can move along on their own and be addressed. This is the proper place for these things. I don't mind going to taxes or ways and means or government operations or wherever else the bill has to go, but this is the proper place for those issues. So I'd like to bring the DNR down at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hackbart, if I could, I think there was a couple questions before about the bill. With Representative Wagenius, I do want to get the DNR as soon as we can. As Representative Hackbart, many of our questions will be ones that the DNR can help ask. But does anybody else have any questions for the author? Representative Wagenius.
My next one would be on the Sandhill Crane. First of all, is that good management to take Sandhill Cranes? And secondly, the license fee is so cheap. Is that enough for the administration of doing the license? So that would be my third question. We'll come up with more in a few minutes.
Okay, and I think those, Representative Hackbart, are good DNR questions, but Representative Knute, I think you're on the list. Representative Knute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Wagenius mentioned some of the things I was concerned about. I wanted a little more explanation about the sucker eggs provision, Section 9, and Section 15, the unprotected birds provision, just some more background information. And then I also have concerns about the Sandhill Crane issue as well, and then Section 58, the coyote and beaver control bounty. Just wanted some more background information about that.
Thank you, Representative Knute. I think all of your questions, as Representative Hackbart said, are ones. I don't know, Mr. Meyer, Major Smith, who's going to do your, Mr. Don Carlos, whoever's going to do the walkthrough for DNR, Mr. Bogus, evidently. Bring them all down. No, just Mr. Boggs. Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, and why don't you, Mr. Boggs, Representative Hackbart, do you want them to start front to back and do their deal?
Yep.
Okay. Mr. Boggs.
Mr. Chair and members, Ed Boggs, Division of Fish and Wildlife. I was talking to someone. Did you want me to walk through the DNR provisions? Is that the
Mr. Bogus, if you could walk through them, and then also where you have positions on the specific items going through, we're going to need to know that.
Okay.
And Mr. Bogus, I actually want you, as you walk through, if you have members in the audience, other DNR people that need to speak to them, I want you to bring them up as you go through so that you can get your people all through here today. We will then hear from the audience. As you walk through the bill, I'd like your other people to come from the different divisions. If they need to speak to it as members have questions. We do want to do this rather quickly, Mr. Bogus, Director Bogus,
okay.
But I do want to get through it. And then members, as you have questions for the different people coming up, you're going to need to ask them. But we're going to try and move this as quick as possible. Director Bogg.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have several people here that can speak to some of these issues. So the first sections of the bill, as Representative Hackbart said, relate to expanding the compensation program. We have several things in here related to elk. This section actually is a Department of Agriculture program that I know they're in the room and may want to speak to, but the effect of these first two sections would be to allow compensation for fence damage surrounding crops or pastures that's damaged by elk It doesn't change the overall appropriation. It changes what's eligible to be compensated. I'll move on, but you know, if the Department of Agriculture wants to comment on this, I think we should come back to this one. These other sections that relate to containment facilities, fish collection, fish sample certification, are all related to fish health, primarily viral hemorrhagic septicemia or VHS concerns that were in last year's bill. The sucker egg provision was also in last year's bill. It's changing the way that we issue those sucker eggs, and I know there was a question from Representative Knuth about this section, so we have Mr. Johannes here. I'd ask him to come up and give the committee a quick background on why we're making this change to how we sell the sucker eggs.
Good morning. My name is Roy Johannes, and I'm with the Division of Fish and Wildlife. And Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, we a long time requirements for obtaining sucker eggs from the department requires a fee. And it was also tied into number of acres of water that a licensee had on their acres, had on their license, and the we felt that it was at a time where we could release those restrictions for how many eggs that they could purchase based on the number of runs that we have. We have actually a ceiling on the number of sucker eggs that are available, so we felt that that was no longer a requirement that was necessary as part of the distribution of white sucker eggs that are allowed for purchase by private hatcheries and aquatic farmers around the state.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you.
Representative Wagenius, could you pull your mic down?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the language on 5.19, you say, and the condition of spawning runs at those historical streams. It seems to me that if you're going to be doing any restriction, you would want to say or rather than and or, because you, if you had a stream that you really shouldn't have eggs taken from, and it because it doesn't work now, shouldn't you be able to do it on that basis alone?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we do have monitoring that goes on to each streams each year, and what happens is if a dealer requests more than a certain allotment of eggs, we do allow a refund if we're not been able to meet the quota, or we shift the dealer from one stream to another for them to make up their eggs where there is a sufficient supply available. We do that with five streams around the state that are in the northwest part of the.
Representative Wagenia.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's fine. My question is, wouldn't the language be easier to work with if you said or rather than and? We don't have to, something maybe to think about. We don't have to decide.
Mr. Johannes.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, yes, that probably would be so.
Representative Wagenius, do you want to move an oral amendment?
I will move an oral amendment on line 5.19 and taking out the word and putting the word or.
Discussion, or Representative Hackbart? Okay, any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Okay, oral amendments adopted. Additional questions? Representative Fabian.
I'd like to go back to the elk thing just for a second, Mr. Chair.
Fabian.
I apologize. with regards to the elk damage, I think I heard you say that there's not going to be any increase in the account, the funding for the elk damage, along with this new language.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, that's correct.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Vagas, can you tell me how the elk obviously are in my district, how you go about processing a claim and what number of dollars have been in the account and what number of dollars have been removed from the account as a result of a
Director Boggs.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, that's a good question. I was just talking to people with the Department of Agriculture who actually run this program. They'd like to come up and explain some of that background and how this would affect that program. So if it's okay with the chair.
Yep, we need the Department of Ag to come forward. Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Friesel. And
Mr. Chairman,
if you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Greta Gauthier, Director of Government Relations Department of Agriculture, and I have with me Mr. Geer Friso. We do administer the program referred to in Sections 1 and 2 of the Delete All Amendment.
Excuse me. You're going to have to spell your last name. I apologize.
Oh, G-A-U-T-H-I-E-R. No relation to Representative Gauthier, as far as I know.
Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple points of information. I don't know, was there a specific question that we needed? I was talking to people, and I didn't have a chance to hear it.
Representative Fabian, do you want to repeat your questions for the Department of Ag?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Gauthier. I'm just wondering how much money is in the account, and how an individual submits a claim, and then how that claim is adjusted, basically, and then how much money is left in the account at the end of the year, if any.
Ms. Gauthier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to have Mr. Friso speak to that, although I will say that we have run out of funds in both 08 and 09 before the end of the year in this program, but he'll be able to give you more detail.
Welcome, Mr. Friso, if you could identify yourself.
Yes, Geer Friso, Minnesota Department of Agriculture. And up until 2009, we had the wolf and the elk funds were managed together, and we had a $100,000 appropriation. And one of the challenges we have had is that there has been an increase in both elk damage claims and wolf damage claims. And so that's why we ran out of money 2 years in a row, primarily from pressure from the wolf fund.
Well, Mr. Friso, we've taken care of one of those problems by shooting a bunch of the elk. We haven't addressed the other issue yet.
Right.
Continue, Mr. Friso.
And the elk claims did increase dramatically in about the mid-2005 time frame, and up to the point where we're getting a dozen or more claims. And those elk claims are extremely costly, and that's what put a lot of pressure on the fund. We are supportive of this language. We do believe producers should be compensated for this damage, but it does increase the cost to the fund and can deplete it much faster. The statute also allows us to draw from the wolf fund if the elk fund gets depleted, but with the increased pressure on the wolf fund as well, that is difficult. To the specific question, we have, as of this year, as of January, the most recent date I have up through January, we've paid out claims of $110,000 $110,000 total, and for elk claims, $22,000.
Representative Fabian, follow up.
Yes, thank you. And maybe this is more a question for the DNR, but I'd like some information on the number of herds and the number of animals in each herd, and what is the target of the DNR in terms of how many elk would they like to see in each herd?
Mr. Friesel, before you leave, could I have a follow-up? What did you say or maybe this is a question for Mr. Bogus, and then I'll let Representative Fabian continue before I ask my question. But can you tell us the wolf what was the issue in the wolf money, and you're actually taking some of the wolf money to use for the elk, but how are you doing that when we don't have a control for the wolves like we do for the elk?
Well, the statute was changed in 2010. That does allow us to go between the two funds to draw off one fund to pay on another fund, depending on where the costs are. But the problem has been recently is that the wolf claims have increased over time, so that fund is also under pressure. We are fortunate this past year in that we did get an additional $100,000 grant from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so that has really helped us get through the current year.
My understanding, Senator Klobuchar is interested in helping us out so we don't have to get federal money, that maybe we could let some people around here take care of some of the wolf issues. Representative Fabian.
To that point, Mr. Chair, thank you. Can you tell me why the wolf claims have increased? kind of a leading question. I apologize for that. But
does the Department of Ag want to talk about the number of wolves in northeastern Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can give you the statistics, and part of that is
Mr. Friesel.
The number of claims has steadily increased, and then also the cost of each claim increase as livestock prices rise. So,
thank you. To this point, Representative Wagenius.
Well, my question is about the financing. When you keep saying the fund is under pressure, that says to me, Mr. Chair, that you may run out of money. And so what happens if you run out of money, and where's the next pot of money coming from?
Mr. Friesel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, we ran out of money in 2008, and we carried over about $15,000 of claims into the next year, so we paid those at the start of the next fiscal year. That creates a little bit of a cascade effect. So then the subsequent year, we were in the hole about almost $60,000, which again we carried over into the 2010 fiscal year. What caught us up was getting that federal grant, so then that sort of evened things out again for us.
Representative Wagenius.
So the question, the basic question I'm trying to get at, Mr. Chair, is will you run out of money in the next biennium?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I obviously don't know. I will comment that the number of elk claims that we have received has gone down dramatically in the past year, and I think that's a result of management activities on the part of DNR, and I think that they need to perhaps comment on that.
Well, Mr. Friesel, we shot all the herd except for four animals, and we're maybe now into Director Bogus, if I'm not mistaken, that the people that were clamoring down here in 08 and 09 from that herd that was mostly domesticated animals, we believe, you shot most of them, if I understand the situation. And so, Director Bogus.
Mr. Chair, you're correct. There was a group. There have been several groups of elk. There's some around Griggle and some others in Kitson County, and those occurred in several groups, that some of which crossed with Manitoba border. And there was one group that had kind of a captive origin nucleus that was causing lots of damage and behaving more like a herd of cattle than a herd of wild elk. And we did basically eliminate that herd through hunting and sharpshooting, and that probably did reduce the claims quite a bit. If we're done with the Department of Agriculture, we could get back to Representative Fabian's question about
Excuse me, Mr. Bogus. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still haven't gotten an answer to my basic question here. With this new language, are you going to run out of money in the next biennium?
Does anybody want to comment on how much either the elk or deer are going to eat in the next 2 years? Ms. Gaudier, excuse me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, of course, in part that will depend on the number of claims we receive. And if with the expanded language here, in terms of eligibility for claims, we may receive more, but we don't know because we haven't, that type of claim hasn't been available in the past, so we have no way to predict how many we will get. But the herd is down. If you want to, we could, I think it would be hard to estimate because the herd is a lot smaller than it was, and so doing a per claim cost and trying to figure out how much money we have left and how quickly we'd spend it, we'd be happy to try to work on that, but I don't know how predictive that will be because of the uncertainty of how many new claims we would get with this expanded language. But if you want, we can try to work something up to look at how quickly we would go through the remainder or the next biennium. There'd be a $75,000 appropriation there is in the general from the general fund for this type of crop and pasture damage in the fiscal 12-13 biennium. We could try to do some estimates. I guess I just can't say with certainty how quickly we'd run out.
Well, Ms. Gaudier, we should do so. You should give us some scenarios of what you think is. I mean, you must have had some rationale or some thoughts about going forward. I didn't mean to be totally a smart aleck, but I understand you can't estimate what might be happening with the wolves, but we shot all the elk that were, there's four left. I'd imagine they're so scared. There's, I understand they're heading towards the other herd, hopefully. But if you could get back to us with what you think is a scenario, we do need to do the responsible thing. Any more, Representative Wagenius? Okay. I think we're done with Department, I'm sorry, Representative Torkel.
I'm sorry to belabor the issue, but when was the, I guess Mr. Bogus, when was the herd reduced?
Director Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, it was last, you know, we'd been working on it through hunting for the last couple of years, but it was last winter, a year ago, that that we completed that, and it's not, and just to clarify, and I was going to have Mr. Cornicelli come up and respond to Representative Fabian's question about how many elk and what are the goals, because we still have some substantial elk herds in both the Grigla and the Kitson County areas, but they're the more wild elk that that still can cause damage, but not at the rate that this Lancaster group was causing. So it doesn't, just because that Lancaster group has been virtually eliminated, doesn't mean there won't continue to be some elk damage claim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Parkinson. A quick follow-up then for the Department of Ag. Have you noticed an effect since that reduction took place? Have you seen an effect on the number of claims?
Mr. Friesel.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, there has been a significant drop in both the numbers and also the size of the claims. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of an overall management question, that bringing some things together here. And I think for Mr. Bogus, those elk, the elk that were shot were thinned, however it was categorized. Did we look at CWD in those?
Director Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Purcell, I know we did disease testing on them. I'd like to bring Mr. Cornicelli up to answer the specifics. We certainly were looking at TB. I'm not positive on CWD, but Mr. Cornicelli could.
Dr. Cornicelli, did you do CWD testing on those animals? If you could just keep it short, introduce yourself and answer the question. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Lou Cornicelli, Department of Natural Resources. The answer is yes. We did a full health screening on all those animals, including bovine tuberculosis, chronic wasting disease, and a host of other things. So, yes, they were, and everything came back negative for all the animals.
Dr. Cornicelli, on both the sharpshooter and the hunter shot animals?
Mr. Chair, yes. We do it routinely for our hunted animals and then the sharp shot and also the landowner ones.
Representative Purcell is okay with that. Continue, Director Bogus.
And Mr. Chair, while Mr. Cornicelli is here, I'd like him to respond to Representative Fabian's questions about the elk numbers and goals.
Dr. Cornicelli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, there are two and a half elk herds in the state. There's the Grigla elk herd. The plan calls for less than 40 animals pre-calving in that population. We have slightly over that. We've been managing down towards that number. Then the other herd is in Kitson County. As Director Bogus indicated, the problem animals have been removed as of last winter. That plan calls for between 20 and 30 animals pre-calving, and it's slightly over that as well. The half a herd is the one we share with Canada. It's summers in Minnesota and winters in Manitoba, so we don't hunt that one. But we work real closely with two elk working groups, one in Grigla and one in Kitson County, and they're pretty satisfied with the direction we're going with elk. Removing those problem animals last winter has alleviated a lot of the depredation concerns that we had.
Continue. Representative Fabian.
Thank you. Mr. Cornicelli, has your number changed on the desirable herd size? You said 40 pre-calving. Has that changed in the past years?
Dr. Cornicelli.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, it has changed slightly. We went through an elk planning process last year. We formed two different elk working groups for the two affected areas and came up with a consensus number that we could live with. And it's we didn't have one previously in Kitson County, so the one we came out with 20 to 30 involved getting rid of the problem animals and then going forward with a population. So that was a new number. The Grigla number is slightly higher than what it was in the past, but again, it was informed through a local working group process. And we met with them again recently this winter to go over the status of the plan and where we were, and they were real satisfied with the direction we were going. So it seems to be, elk can be problems, and they're difficult to manage, but it seems to be going well at this point in time because we're using a lot of community-based stuff.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carnicelli, you know, just for full disclosure, I'm very intimately involved with that herd down there. They are within a mile of where I own some hunting land, and I've got video of them. I've got, so I'm, it seems to me that there's, I'd like the minutes of your meeting that you had with the stakeholders in Grigla, please, if you can get those to me. There seems to be some discrepancy in what I've heard from people back there and what's coming out today, and before we go any further, I'd like to make sure that I get some more information. Can you, have you got that?
Dr. Carnicelli?
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, yes, I do. I can forward that to Ms. Rudolph and get it to the committee.
Thank you.
And Representative Fabian, are you talking about the Grigla herd when you're talking about?
Mr. Chair, yes, it's the Grigla herd. Yep.
And Dr. Carnicelli, what about that small of a number and the future of the herd and protecting interbreeding and such? Can we actually manage a herd to that small a number and be it a viable long-term number?
Mr. Chair, yes, you can. You get towards a slippery slope with minimum viable populations and genetic diversity. Elk are a lot like white-tailed deer in that they're pretty diverse individually, so inbreeding isn't typically a problem with small population size, but it could be over, you know, generations. So we don't have very high reproduction in that herd, but we also don't have a lot of mortality because, you know, they're not really affected by predation rates and such. So, you know, we can maintain 40, 50 elk, you know, probably for quite a long time before we saw problems. But, you know, ideally you want to be looking at numbers over, you know, over 100 to be considered genetically viable over the long term.
And Dr. Carnicelli, do these two herds never intermingle? How many miles apart are they?
Mr. Chair, they probably do a little bit. It's hard to say because we don't have any radio telemetry data on either herd, but we occasionally see elk or get reports of elk kind of between. It wouldn't be unusual if they did mix a little bit because elk move long distances just because they can. So it wouldn't be surprising, but we don't have a lot of evidence to suggest that they do it very often.
And Dr. Carnes,
yeah, and they're, oh, I'm sorry, they're about 80 miles apart.
80 miles. Thank you. Continue, Director Bogus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Moving on, I think the next section would be 13. There are several sections, as Representative Hackbarth mentioned, that relate to Sandhill Crane. I know that Representative Wagenius had some questions about the fees for the Sandhill Crane license, and I would just point out that Subdivision 24 classifies Sandhill Cranes as small game, which would mean that small game hunting license would be required, which was not the case this past year. So we're also gathering revenue from them purchasing a small game license if they weren't already. And the other thing I would just say on the Sandhill Crane issue is that we have been working with the Minnesota Chapter of the Audubon Society on developing a plan. We have two populations of Sandhill Cranes that overlap Minnesota. One in the very northwest is the one that was hunted. It's called the Mid-Continent population. It's a very large population, about 500,000 birds across the most of Canada and through the central, kind of the central flyway of the Dakotas and just the very northwest corner of Minnesota. And then we have an eastern population of Sandhill Cranes that we see around the cities here. You can hear them now as they're migrating, and that population's been growing and expanding, and we've agreed to work on additional planning and perhaps some sort of a additional survey for Sandhill Cranes in the state. Section 14, the undressed bird provision.
Representative Wagenius, to the Sandhill Cranes.
To the Sandhill Cranes, yes. Back to the finances. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The basic question is, between the small game and the $4, does that recoup your costs or not? I mean, everything should be paying for itself, and that's my question.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, right now we're not doing any special surveys. We're issuing the licenses and doing providing the names and addresses to the Fish and Wildlife Service for the hunter survey, so the $4 is actually recouping our current costs.
Representative Wagenius.
Would that recoup your, thank you, Mr. Chair, would that recoup your cost if you did the appropriate amount of survey to know that we are not damaging this population?
Director Vargas.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, the surveys on this population are done by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, so those surveys are already being done.
Thank you.
Continue, Director Vargas.
Mr. Chair, Section 14 had the technical amendment earlier. This is simplifying provisions for transporting birds, basically allowing a wing for every species except ducks to be acceptable for transport. Ducks would still be a head and wing, and then providing an additional option for pheasant, Hungarian partridge, and wild turkey of a foot and a leg in lieu of a wing. So that's more of a simplification for transporting game birds.
Director Vargas, I'd like to hear from Major Smith why we require head-end. We require two parts for migratory game, unlike some of the neighboring states. And in regards to waterfowl, Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Major Rodman Smith, Operations Manager, DNR Enforcement. To your question, Mr. Chair, the reason we would like to keep the fully feathered wing and head is for duck ID purposes for our conservation officers in the field. Waterfowl in the fall is not quite at full plumage, sometimes not even close to it. It's hard to sometimes identify the duck in the round, even after his hunter has shot it, it would just be a tool for us to make sure that we are able to fully identify that bird as a particular species. It would be a lot more difficult if it was just the fully feathered wing.
In Major Smith, other states, I think specifically South Dakota, I'm aware of, does not have that requirement. I was under the understanding that you really don't need this, and it is a additional hassle for the hunting community. Why do other states not require this?
Mr. Chair, the federal law allows us to go to just the wing or a fully feathered head, and so if this body decides to do that, we can do that. We just assume that because of the especially early season ducks that are shot, they're not quite at full plumage. I mean, if we had the spring season, it would be very easy to tell with just one wing what a critter is. But when they're reduced to your possession, they're cleaned, they might be partially frozen, they're in a bag, being transported home, it can be tough with just one wing to identify the certain species, especially when you get into some of those species of divers that can be pretty similar in appearance when it comes to the wing.
Thank you. Continue, Director Boggs.
Mr. Chair, Section 15 on unprotected birds was part of the bill last year. It just adds Eurasian collared dove to the list of unprotected birds. This is a non-native species that's been expanding from the southeast United States and now occurs in southern Minnesota in low numbers. It's very similar in appearance to the native mourning dove, and we don't want to encourage this species, and also it's easily mistaken during dove season for a mourning dove, and we don't want it to be a violation for someone to shoot one of these Eurasian collared doves. Section 16 deals with the definition of wild animals and just clarifies, because the result of a recent court case, that even a dead wild animal still is covered by the definition of wild animals, and some of the possession requirements would still apply. Section 17 deals with emergency deterrent materials. This is a program of the DNR. It's funded with game and fish dollars. There's no additional appropriation here. It's just authorizing additional uses of the funds that we have available, again, to help address the elk issue. We've been trying to get more aggressive on dealing with the problem elk through compensation. This is more of a preventive program where we can actually pay for some fencing or other deterrent materials. Item C, 2C of this section, it raises...
Excuse me, Director Boggess, I've got a couple questions here, but if you had just hit the highlights, the problematic ones, so that...
Okay.
If we could, but there are a couple questions. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Bogus. Mr. Bogus, going back to Section 16, the wild animals definition change, I don't have Section 97A in front of me, but I'm curious about what implications that may have and what prompted the desire to change that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, I'll ask Major Smith to expand on that.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, this change comes to us through a decision in a court case where an individual found an animal or claimed to have found an animal on his property and said that since it's not a wild animal because it's not living, reduced it to his possession, and it was a protected wild animal. And we had operated under a lot of the game and fish, the majority of the game and fish laws talk about wild animals, possession of wild animals, and you can only possess a wild animal that's protected through a license. And we see this this change to clarify whether a wild animal is dead or alive to close what we see as a potentially a major loophole. And I can give you an example. If the definition stays as is, meaning living creatures, people can start finding a lot of dead deer on their property and claiming that, well, they're not wild animals because they're not living, so I don't need to have any possession permit from the DNR. I don't need a license to have that animal anymore because it's dead and it's not by definition a wild animal. So we want to make sure that the wild animal, and we've operated in game and fish law for several decades under the definition of wild animal, under the understanding that wild animal included dead. And we're just trying to clarify that when a person finds a dead animal on their property that's a protected dead animal, that they need to have some type of possession permit in order to possess that animal, or they have to have a license in order to possess that animal.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, by finding it on their property, I mean, if it's a dead deer laying in the woods, obviously, they're not going to be implicated for possessing something they shouldn't. Can you elaborate some more?
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I guess I could run through a couple different scenarios. I'll give you an example. Most recently, we had a rather large elk up in the northwestern part of the state that ended up dying. And our conservation officers went out there. They determined that animal died of natural causes, and they gave that animal to the person that found it, and they wrote out a possession permit to that individual so that they could legally possess that animal. Under game, if this law wasn't changed so that it didn't include dead creatures, we would have an extremely hard time making sure that that person could legally possess that, or that person would be able to possess that animal. We would have an extremely difficult time with the figuring out how that animal died. And so making sure that the animal is, the definition of wild animal is dead or alive, would assist us in making sure that the person had the right possession paperwork, they either had to obtain it by a license, and so forth. So if we don't have this, whether dead or alive, it could open up some major loopholes and some folks that could start finding a lot of dead animals on their property, and they wouldn't need to have any type of license or permit from anyone to retain it.
Representative Fabian.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Smith, thank you. I'm wondering about back to 17, Section 17, 16, back to there. The elk, I thought we heard testimony earlier. I know the guys who found that elk were in Caribou Township, the Muirhead boys, but anyway. I thought we heard testimony earlier that one of the conservation officers had disposed of that elk. It was very, very near dead when they found it. Is that... Am I incorrect?
No. Representative Fabian, I think the guy sat by it until it completely keeled over. Major Smith.
That's, Mr. Chair, that's my recollection, too, but I wouldn't be 100% okay on that, but that's my recollection.
But was there a conservation officer? Was there, excuse me, Mr. Chair, was there a conservation officer there at that same time, too?
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, I'm not exactly sure if he was there at that particular time. that it expired.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair.
Representative Fabian.
Okay, Section 17, it talks, line 7.30, talks about the native elk range as determined by the commissioner. Definition of native elk range, please.
Director Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, there is a definition of native elk range already in the Board of Animal Health statutes, and we would propose to make our definition the same as what's in the, I think it's north of 2 and west of 71, but I don't recall for sure. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
You could get back to us with that, Director Bogus. Yeah. Representative Fabian?
If that's in there, then why do we need as determined by the commissioner?
Director Bogus.
Mr. Chair and Representative Fabian, the other way to do it would be to reference Chapter 35 here in Chapter 97A. But since it's in another section of statute, we could just repeat the language that's in Chapter 35. So we could make it, if the committee would like certainty, we can work with the committee and Representative Fabian and insert the same language that's in Chapter 35.
Sounds like a plan.
All right.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One more question. Mr. Vargas, not actually a question. I just want to be on record as making sure that, because we heard testimony earlier that these elk can travel up to 80 miles. And if, you know, we have something that happens outside of the normal range, you might say, I just want to make sure that we are on record as making sure that that's an option for those people to get some compensation. Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back on the dead animal example, I think that this is a good provision. In 2009, and I hunt in the antlerless season, and I was on my property and came across a deer with a hole in it who'd been laying there for about a week. And what I did is I got my license tag and tagged it. It had a very big antler set on it, and took the head. It had been out for a week, so it wasn't good anymore. And I think that if we don't have this provision with having dead animals, having that tracking, you know, to have somebody tag that deer if they find it on their property. You're absolutely right. You're going to find, people are going to be finding deer all over, and they'll be finding headless deer all over. And what I did with mine is I tried to do one of those outdoor mounts, just a bare head mount, and had the license tagged to those antlers and had it outside, and it was stolen. And so having that licensed rack was there, that gives also that tool for law enforcement to use, that antlers, those antlers were on a deer that was taken with, that had a license attached to it. So these are real world situations that happen out there, and I think this provision of the bill is a good provision.
Well, Representative Hansen, I'm wondering, I just covered up the one in my front yard with more snow this morning because I haven't gotten to the taxidermist yet. I better get it to him over the weekend so somebody doesn't steal it. We have next Representative Dill.
And thank you, and Major. What happens if a person finds a deer that's dead and it's been shot and or somehow taken illegally, but he finds it on his property and he wants to possess the deer and get a permit from him? How does that get handled in the field? I don't know.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, ideally the individual would call the conservation officer. The conservation officer would go out there, look at the facts of the scene, talk with the individual, and then that officer would make that determination if they doesn't think that the person that found it was up to any chicanery or involved with it in any way. They would more than likely give that possession tag to that individual to retain that animal.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Major Smith, along the lines of Representative Dill, and I guess I've got a concern that we may be implicating people who may not have done anything illegally. As Representative Hansen pointed out, there may be a buck or a doe with a bullet hole in it that travels who knows how many miles before it expires. and it may expire in your yard or my yard or whoever's. And in that case, is there? It seems to me that there's a certain amount of liability if we do accept this change that accrues to somebody who has a dead animal in their yard that could be looked at somebody, a conservation officer or others, as questionable. What are some of the penalties around these situations that might be attached to that accruing liability?
Major Smith.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative John Sikulski, I can think of several examples where it's actually the opposite of your fears, where we found in the last year, we kind of referenced the large elk up in northwestern part of the state. Also in that Bemidji area, we had two trophy deer that were locked together and died on somebody's property. That person called. The conservation officer went out, gave them a possession permit. There are some people that thought that we should have retained those, like we should have retained the large elk because it was worth a lot of value. Just in the metro here, there was a very large buck that got tangled up in a tennis court net. The officer went out there, saw that there wasn't any chicanery with that either, that it died of natural causes, gave the person a possession permit. We got emails and calls from folks that said we should have retained those antlers and sold them because they're worth a lot of money, but our officers were doing the right thing. They were making the investigation, determining that there wasn't anything wrong. So I think those are a few major examples of where people are actually on the opposite side of what you're looking at. But as far as to your penalties and to get your question, it'd be a person could be charged with the illegal possession of a wild animal if they don't get the proper paperwork, if they don't get a possession permit, or if they don't obtain it through a license that is set up through game and fish law. In order to illegally acquire or possess an animal, they have to either have a license and legally obtain it through a license, like a deer license, or in the case where they found something on their property, they would call a conservation officer, they'd go and check it out, and then give that person a possession permit. So I guess it would be the illegal possession of, depending on what kind of animal it is, if it was a deer, bear, or moose, it'd be a big game animal, and if it was something else, it could be illegal possession of small game or fish. So those would be basically the broad implication or charges that they could be charged with.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Major Smith, what type of, are they facing a criminal penalty at that point? Is there a civil liability in terms of a dollar amount they would potentially be charged if it was judged that they had engaged in some sort of chicanery at that point?
Mr. Chair.
Major Smith.
Representative Jaskowski, we would work with the county attorney with our case like we do with all our cases, and if there was enough evidence that the individual did do something illegal to illegally take that animal or to illegally cause the demise of that animal or death of that animal, they could be charged with a crime. They could be charged with a misdemeanor, or depending on through the investigation, if we were able to find out how that animal met its demise through that person's action, if we found out that the person shined it with a spotlight, they could be charged with a gross misdemeanor shining. They shot it off their back porch out of season, they could be charged with a gross misdemeanor as well. But it'd all be through an investigation. It wouldn't be something where the officer could just go out and say, you know, I think you did this and you're being charged. I mean, we work with county attorneys through all this stuff, and we have to develop a case, and it has to be something that goes through court.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you,
thank
Major.
You. Continue. Director Bogus, I do want to get done by 10-2. We have two testifiers. 10-2, we have two testifiers, or I'm going to have to break or something. I have two testifiers that have asked to testify today. If you don't get done, you're going to be back here on Tuesday to finish because we have to get through all this. Members, we are not going to get the amendments today. So if there's folks here that are wondering, there's no way we're going to get to the amendments. So we will repost and make sure all the amendments are posted. And I will ask that everyone that does have amendments to bring them forward and honor the 24-hour rule. We will be back at 8:15 Tuesday morning to do the bill. And we will do the bill on Tuesday. and we will move through. It's fine if we want to take questions and all this, but we need to do the bill on Tuesday and move it. Representative Hackbart's talked about a number of stops that he has potentially along the way, and we didn't do a game and fish bill last year for whatever reason, but we got to have a game and fish bill for a few things in here. It's going to be tough to not do, and the Senate has a number of game and fish bills in their omnibus bill, so the timing of this is appropriate to be moving forward. So with that, Director Bogus, maybe a little more oomph, and we'll get going here.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I could just kind of skip ahead to where we've either got some concerns that we'd like to bring to the attention of the committee or some testimony that we'd like to offer. So if that's acceptable, I would skip ahead actually to I just lost it.
Well, Director Bogus, we better hear about two-line fishing and spearing, I would strongly recommend. Representative Wagenius.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to hear about Section 21, too.
Director Bogus, Section 21, penalties.
Major Smith.
Okay, let me ask my
question. Representative Wagenius.
Okay, it seems to me that using the criminal system when we hardly have enough money for the criminal system is doing the most expensive thing we can do. If we use the civil system and said, or the administrative procedure system, much cheaper. And my question is there a fine level where you could actually, when somebody is essentially harming something that belongs to all of us, that we get a fine and that's a deterrent to somebody doing what you don't want them to do? Wouldn't it be better, is my question, to use a civil system and have a big fine? A fine that works. I don't know what the number is.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, if Mr. Chair, if I could just walk through this revocation real quickly so people understand that what these folks are doing. To be revoked for hunting big game, you need to have either two taking violations within 3 years, or you have to do a couple of different actions that are pretty that are pretty serious. Would be taking a deer without a license, taking an over limit of deer would be a 3-year revocation, being convicted of a gross over limit. So if you're convicted of a gross over limit for big game, so that's over a $500 penalty. So that'd be more than one deer or a trophy deer. Taking deer in a closed season, gross misdemeanor shining, those are 3-year revocations. Hunting while intoxicated is a revocation. So there's several different things that can revoke somebody's big game privileges. And the notification for the big game privileges revocation is several. When the individual is given a citation or they're given a ticket, they're actually given an informational card that talks about how their rights can be revocated. Once they're found guilty, they're sent a certified letter that tells them that their big game privileges have been revoked. And then they're also locked out of buying a license. They can't buy a big game license. So these folks have gotten a certified letter, and they can't buy a license, and they're still out there hunting. We have about 300 people that are revoked right now for big game hunting in the state of Minnesota. So these folks just aren't getting it. And, you know, when we get into bigger fines, we get into bigger civil fines, civil penalties, there are some provisions that allow for, if there is a civil penalty that's rather large, that people can go to an ALJ, and I believe this is the way it was explained to me, that they might be able to reduce that based on somebody's financial circumstances. So the reason we went with the criminal method is that these folks just don't get it, and that they need to be whacked with a gross misdemeanor.
Representative Wagenius.
Okay. I hear we have folks that don't get it, and they need to be whacked. We're in agreement here.
Yeah.
The question I have is there an alternative to going through the criminal system? Going through the criminal system is expensive for us. It's expensive for how many officers have to go up and show up in court. and it's expensive for the courts. The question I have is somebody who has money, and maybe there's somebody who doesn't have money and you're going to have to put them through the court system, but is there somebody who has money? Why isn't a big fine a more beneficial to both the state and to stopping what needs to be done? Because some people, the bad thing is having to pay a big fine. Some people, it's going to jail. This seems to be only looking at one section of the population where we might be able to do something cheaper, better. Not to necessarily just, I guess I'm looking for an alternative here that would be get the same job done.
Major Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, we do have civil penalties for some recreational vehicle issues, some aquatic invasive species transportation. There are some civil penalties related to trespass, which may or may not be related to the taking of some type of wild animal. But in game and fish law, we really don't have any civil penalties in relation to taking wild animals, or big game animals, small game animals, game fish. So it's kind of uncharted new territory, and I guess I really don't have the best answer for you right now. Other than that, we really haven't done it in the past, and that may be something we can start looking into.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that you could have an alternative here, or do something that is an alternative that wouldn't tie up your officers in the courts when they should be out in the field, and it wouldn't tie up the court system, and it's hard to prosecute. I mean, you have to have a prosecutor do a gross misdemeanor. All that together is a very expensive proposition. And if we're doing reform here, and we're trying for reform, and that's a good thing, then let's look at the alternative and maybe consult with the AG who works the Attorney General's office and find out some alternatives that would be less expensive and deter people who don't want to pay $10,000 or whatever, that it really would work to deter what they're doing. Because some people know they'll never go to jail because it's just too hard for you to prosecute it. That's my basic.
To Representative Wagenius's point, how many of these kinds of cases do you have a year?
Mr. Chair, right now there's about 300 people on the revocation list. I would guess it's probably less than a dozen statewide in 1 year.
Thank you. Director Bogus, let's lay out a plan here so that we need to be done on Tuesday as we move forward. You've got folks that need to talk about some fishing issues, two-line fishing, spearing. We're going to need to hear from those people on Tuesday. Do you have other issues to go through, Director Bogus?
Mr. Chair, there's a couple of minor things, but our key issues are in sections 50, 55, 61, and 62. Most of them relate to the two lines and the Northern Pike regulations. And then we'd also like a chance for Dr. Cornicelli to talk about the section that deals with the proposed deer hunting rules for Southeast Minnesota. So those are the key ones. We've got a couple of others that if we could work with the author between now and then, it's more of a kind of technical cleanup type things that we don't need to get into right now.
Well, let me ask. Can one of the pages see if Representative Draskowski is still in the hallway? I believe it's his provision, I would imagine, on Zone 3 deer hunting. See if he's out there. Dr. Conicelli, if he is out there, I would like you to talk about that. If he's not, I'm going to have to ask you to come back Tuesday. I don't want to talk about it when it's his provision with him not being here, Director Bogus. So why don't we, Director Bogus, put us on hold? Well, there's two people in the audience that asked to testify. Ms. Hain, if you could come down, it's in regards to the decoy issue, and then Mr. Davis is next. And if you could keep your testimony short, give us the specifics of how your specific situation is in regards to the decoy situation. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Kathy Connie. I'm a lawyer at Fagry & Benson, and unlike my usual role here, I'm here as a volunteer on behalf of family and friends who all hunt ducks on the Pelican Lake that's located outside of Orr, Minnesota. So I'm referring to section 47, that's on line 19.18 of your delete all. Under current law, you can only leave decoys out overnight if you're a private property owner and you don't have sufficient vegetation around your property for somebody else to hunt there, basically. And so Pelican Lake, the one that's outside of Orr, like most lakes in northern Minnesota, doesn't have a lot of vegetation around the rocky shoreline. So for those of us that have hunted there all our lives or with our parents or our grandparents, we get up there mostly just on weekends. We do leave our decoys out. We don't usually put more than, say, 35 decoys out. I understand from talking to Representative Hackbarth that he included this, I'll let him speak for himself, but there must be a decoy war someplace. But we do, it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, we do have current law that restricts the abuse of leaving decoys out around private property. So with all due respect, I would just really love to see you delete that provision.
Questions for Ms. Haney? Well, Ms. Haney, thank you. This is a tough issue because those are waters that are available to the general public, and it dependent on your individual situation, and you talked about yours where it's only 35 decoys or whatever, but we have the potential under current law where somebody could put out hundreds and really potentially kind of reserve a spot, which is troubling. And I'm hopeful if you can work with the DNR and Representative Hackbarth to see how we can move forward on this. This is a tough issue. Ms. Haney.
Mr. Chair, under Section 97B.805, if you don't, you have to have natural vegetation sufficient to partially conceal a hunter. For that hunter to be able to, put out decoys along any shoreline, private or otherwise. So if you don't have that kind of, so if there is that kind of vegetation, we can't leave our decoys out. Can't, under current law. But without that vegetation, no other hunter can hunt there. So if there's no, if there's not sufficient vegetation to conceal the hunter, they can't hunt there. And if there is sufficient vegetation, we can't leave our decoys out. So I guess, again, I would, with all due respect, argue with you a little bit that we're already really covered under current law in terms of abusing it.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Dill.
No, that was the point I was going to make, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for your testimony. Thank I appreciate you. I know you're. This is an important issue for you. Thanks. Next, we have Mr. Davis. Welcome, Mr. Davis. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Leslie Davis with the Earth Protection Environmental Group. There should be a law against starting these meetings before 10 o'clock. Maybe somebody will do something about that in the future. I don't like 8:15 meetings in St. Paul. So
thank you, Mr. Davis.
That's not why I'm here, to complain about
well,
that.
Well, good.
But believe it or not, I got 4 calls from people. Now, that's pretty huge for me about the sandhill crane issue. And you shouldn't be doing something like this. What the DNR is trying to do with their sneaky tactics, as if that wasn't bad enough last year in getting it through without any public testimony, they come to you to do their dirty work now and cover up for them and get you to okay the killing of yet another bird that hasn't been killed in 100 years. As if the mourning dove, you know, people thought the mourning dove was a bird that gets up early, not mourning dove, you know, and we went ahead and ordered the killing of that particular creature. That's kind of outrageous, you know. I know they don't drink beer or buy Viking tickets, but they certainly don't deserve to be killed. So getting 4 calls from people express different points of view about them. And one person says, you know, we send people around the world to kill other people that haven't bothered us. So what's the big deal about killing some birds? It's a very serious matter. When you people stand for election and you go out and tell people that you voted to kill birds that haven't been killed in 100 years, see if you can get elected. When you go to the schools, you go and tell the kids that you voted to kill sandhill crane birds. I'll figure out how to pronounce that. So take that out of this bill, would you please? I know there's a lot of technical things in here that are important for you to have in a game and fish bill, but killing more birds is not an important thing for this committee to do.
Thank you, Mr. Davis.
So I look forward to you eliminating that from this bill.
Thank you. I appreciate your comments. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think I wasn't listening to every word, but I really kind of take exception to the fact that we're killing birds that haven't been killed. I mean, I've hunted cranes in three or four provinces of Manitoba, in Canada, and in North Dakota, South Dakota, not in Nebraska, but other states. The reason they're protected in Nebraska is because it's a huge staging area on the Platte River near my farm in Kearney, and it's about 500,000 birds there, and it's like an hourglass. They go through there, so Nebraska chooses to. But, I mean, they are being shot. They are a migratory bird. They are covered under Federal Migratory Bird Act, and just as the mourning dove is. So I really take exception to the fact that they're not being harvested. And that's my thought about it.
Thank you. Director Boggess, if you could come down with Dr. Connerstelli. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis.
Moment. When the bloodlust of the hunters kill in, there's really no way to stop them. And people are counting on you folks to recognize that and do something about it. I don't expect the killers to solve the killing.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Director Boggess and Dr. Connerstelli, if you could talk about that one provision, we may save Dr. Connerstelli for coming back. Director Boggess.
Mr. Chair, quickly, just it was section, I lost my page now, I think it's section 60, 62 of the bill. Would essentially prohibit us from continuing the management that we've started last fall in southeast Minnesota. It's called, popularly known as Zone 3, now called the 300 series, and we've gone through extensive public process to implement those changes. We understand they're controversial. We knew that going into it. We also know from what other states' experiences have been that after hunters have operated under this system for a few years, they often come to favor it, and even hunters in other areas start to ask for it. So we've been through the painful year, which is always the first year with antler point restrictions, because you can't shoot a lot of deer that normally you were able to shoot. But now this coming fall, there will be a lot more older bucks available. And if this section becomes law, it would basically undo what we're trying to do. We've committed to at least a three-year evaluation of this, because we really can't do it for a shorter period of time and tell how it's working. We're not committed to it forever, but we would ask the committee to not enact Section 62 at this time until we can have a chance to follow through with our process and our program to see how it operates. And Dr. Cornicelli has done a lot of the research behind this and been to the meetings, and we've had extensive public input and involvement, and he can respond in more detail, but that's our basic concern on this section.
Dr. Cornicelli, anything to add?
Yes, Mr. Chair, as Director Boggess pointed out, we've been doing this work since 2005 and really went through a very open and inclusive process where we increasingly use social science data to help inform our biological decision making, and we went through both random surveys of deer hunters. We surveyed hunters that were actually put through these regulations on a test basis, and then we surveyed hunters again in 2009 and found support for going forward with the antler point restrictions. We held six public meetings in the southeast and did an online process, and actually found about two-thirds of our hunters supported the antler point restriction at the public meetings. We did them this year in 2010. We saw no difference in numbers of hunters in Zone 3 compared to last year, and which is a good measure of whether people accept the regulation if they don't go. And we had about the same number of people. There's some pretty high expectations from our hunters that this is going to be better deer hunting going forward, because as Director Boggess said, we went through the most difficult period, which is the first year restrictions, and there's some pretty high expectations that this is going to work, and then we will reevaluate it in 3 years like we promised to do. But this really, we went through a lot of public input to get to the point where we were in 2010.
Thank you. Mr. Kelleher from the Deer Hunters, if you could give us your comments, and then we're going to get to Representative Drazkowski's question. Mr. Kelleher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be very brief. My name is Tom Kelleher. I'm here from the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. I got a call this morning at about 7:30 to support Representative Drukowski's provision in this bill, which I believe is your provision. Last year, we promoted a provision to make it what I describe as the plain Jane version, just to re-institute the late season with no restrictions, no antler point restrictions, no prohibitions on party hunting. We have a very large chapter down in the Winona area, and they are quite adamant that they like the previous law or previous ability to have that late season without the limited restrictions on party hunting, antler point restrictions, and so on.
Thank you. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Cornicelli, you and I have been in discussion about this issue for a number of years now, and I know there was a survey conducted a while ago, and apparently your interpretation of the survey results was different than mine. I remember the survey, it asked something to the effect, are you in favor of putting forward restrictions to manage the herd, and the majority of people said they wouldn't want restrictions, but then the survey went on further to ask, if there were restrictions, would you support these restrictions? And then, as I understand and have watched, the decision was made as we went forward to put these restrictions in place based on that second set of questions, almost throwing out the first screen that was put into the survey. I struggle with the decision that the department has made to go forward with this to begin with. And then I wonder about the questions you mentioned, biological decision making. I would really refer to this as rather biological decision making, political decision making, and that's really what it is. Members, we have a situation, as we know, around Pine Island right now, which is in the southeast zone, where, and Mr. Cornicelli, you can further comment, but I understand 70 or 80 deer per square mile, and we have noticed this in southeast. The deer densities there are very high. This particular limit on the ability to harvest animals is working in direct opposition to what needs to be done in providing for more ability for harvest. The numbers of hunters, as I understand, in the zone, I'd be interested in your comments on that, actually was reduced in southeast Minnesota, as was the deer kill. Both of them exceptions or differences from the overall representation of what we're seeing in the state. The state, as I remember seeing the data, was either staying flat or maybe slightly increasing in some areas, but in southeast we were actually decreasing ostensibly because of this. I struggle with where we're going. There's a large number, I would very easily say the majority of hunters in southeast Minnesota, the vast majority of hunters, want to see these restrictions removed. Members, I have a
Representative Jaskowski. I'm going to actually cut you off. We're going to approve the minutes, and we're going to, Dr. Cornicelli, you're going to have to come back Tuesday morning. Representative Jaskowski, are you okay with continuing?
I am. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Point? And Representative Hansen, are you okay with the questioning taking place? It's not my habit to keep us longer, and we're already here 2 or 3 minutes past time. So, Representative Jaskowski, Dr. Cornicelli, I apologize. We're going to make you come back Tuesday morning. Members, I have the minutes of March 23rd and March 24th.
I'll move
if
the
somebody
minutes.
Would move those minutes.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the minutes.
Representative Scott moves the minutes of March 23rd and 24th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. Meeting's adjourned.